the Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov, how are you guys doing? I hope all is good. A lot of little snippets that I wanted to go through this morning before we get into the main guts of the news. There are lots of little strange things that have been happening. First of all, there was an attack yesterday in Jerusalem's central bus station. Two Haredi teenagers actually were stabbed in a clothing store, which was within the central bus station area. They are reported to have been moderately hurt, even though the reports say that the first aiders who came to the scene say that they found two people actually unconscious after having been stabbed. But it seems as if they're having been hospitalized, they're doing okay. The assailant was a 17-year-old who comes from a town near to Hebron. He was reported to have been shot and neutralized. It's not clear whether he was actually killed or not in that attack. The security guards came directly to the store and managed to save the situation. It could have been a pretty serious incident, but fortunately the security was on hand. So that was one incident that happened yesterday. The second thing is that an Israeli light plane crashed near to the island of Samos, the Greek island of Samos. Two Israelis on board, it was a Cessna 182, crashed apparently while trying to land on Samos and landed up in the sea. And it turns out that the two victims, the two people on board who've been killed, one of whom was a former of the communications ministry, him and his wife, and he is actually a witness, or was a witness, for the prosecution in the Netanyahu trial.
Wow.
So that has created a little bit of consternation. Mm. I don't think that we can really read anything at all into this. I think that we would really be jumping to conclusions of a major, in a major way if we started to consider conspiracy theories. I think the two are simply just coincidental, but nonetheless, just an interesting little development. Another point, another story that has hit the Israeli news is the story about the young Italian Israeli boy who was the only survivor in that cable car crash that killed his parents and his grandparents. Now, he's been the subject of a battle between a family in Italy and family in Israel. And yesterday, apparently, he was picked up by his grandfather in Italy, driven across the border to Switzerland, and from there, apparently, boarded a private jet to Tel Aviv to come to his grandparents in Israel. This has been reported as a kidnapping. Why a private jet? Because a child on his own can't travel easily on a scheduled aircraft without permission required from the legal guardians. The Italian courts have ruled that the young boy should stay with his aunt and uncle in Italy. He is now apparently with his parents, with his grandparents, I'm sorry, in Israel. So another little story that I'm sure we have not yet heard the end of. And just another one is the death of Baruch Nachshon, Rabbi Baruch Nachshon, who was more well known for being an artist than a rabbi, very, very closely associated, linked with the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And apparently the Lubavitcher Rebbe even gave him a scholarship to go and study at an art school in New York, but an art school that would allow him to practice his art in a kosher manner. So in other words, not to be required to draw models in the nude or sculpting the human form, which he wasn't willing to do. And he was the only person that I'm aware of who actually had an art exhibition at Lubavitch headquarters, one at 770 in the well-known Lubavitch headquarters in New York, and in the presence of the Lubavitch Rebbe. He passed away at the age of 82. Baruch Nachshon, a rabbi and a well-known religious artist, which I think has kind of set him aside from other people.
Amazing. Very, very interesting. One of our listeners asking if somebody managed to get a knife into the Tachana. I thought there was such heavy security there.
Well, there is security around most public areas in Israel, but as we all know, the security is really more designed to make people nervous and to make people self-conscious than it is to detect weapons that people might be carrying. I think it's an almost impossible task to expect that security guards at the Tachana Merkazit in Jerusalem, which is a pretty busy place, will be able to inspect each and every individual moving in every possible way. And so inevitably, knives are possible to smuggle in. Unfortunately, even though the security is pretty tight, nonetheless, these things are possible and they do happen from time to time. Mm.
Prime Minister Naftali Bennett was in Egypt yesterday to meet with Egyptian President al-Sisi. That is absolutely incredible. And I saw a little article that, in fact, they even had different plates for him for his kosher food.
So I think a lot of firsts took place yesterday in Sharm el-Sheikh with the meeting between President al-Sisi and Naftali Bennett. First of all, this is the first meeting between the head of state of Egypt and Israel in 10 years. The last time that the two leaders met was when Prime Minister Netanyahu was also in Sharm el-Sheikh in 2011. So I think that that's quite astonishing that neighbors who cooperate on so many different levels did not have a meeting of the heads of state in the course of 10 years. It's almost inconceivable that that's the situation. And that, of course, was Prime Minister Netanyahu meeting at the time with Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, both of whom have had quite a history since that meeting. Of course, Sharm el-Sheikh, having been an Israeli town before the Sinai was returned, so another significant about the meeting. And, of course, it's now the location of a presidential palace belonging to the president of Egypt. And it was also noted that Israeli flags were present at the meeting, both within the meeting room where both an Israeli and an Egyptian flag, as well as outside of the meeting location where apparently both Israeli and Egyptian flags were hoisted to signal the meeting between the two heads of state, something that didn't happen apparently 10 years ago when Prime Minister Netanyahu met with Hosni Mubarak. And the Egyptian media seemed willing, or the presidential palace at least, seemed willing to advertise the meeting and to issue press releases, which again is something of a first because previously they've left that aspect to the Israeli press to report rather than to the Egyptian press, almost signaling that they wanted to keep it very, very low key in Egypt, but not on this occasion. So I think quite a lot of efforts made on the part of the Egyptians, first of all, to give the relevant respect to Naftali Bennett as the head of state, and also in his personal capacity as an observant Jew, and of course the food and the separate coats, plates and things that you mentioned. But more important than that were items on the agenda for discussion. And it was summarized as disarming Hamas, the return of the hostages, and halting Iranian aggression. That seems to have been the crux of the meeting yesterday at the Red Sea Resort in Sharm el-Sheikh, disarming Hamas being important because I think a lot of, you know, when we spoke yesterday about Foreign Minister Yair Lapid wanting to try to create a different reality in Gaza, his idea or the way that he presented it was to defeat Hamas. I think that there is a certain disagreement over exactly what we want in Gaza. Do we wish to defeat Hamas, or would we prefer for Hamas to be there, but in a slightly different guise? Because, of course, defeating Hamas potentially means replacing them with something that's even worse than what we have at the moment. They often say, be careful what you wish for, because it may actually come true, and then you're going to have to deal with the consequences of whatever's happened next. And by defeating Hamas, there is a view that says that it is possibly a worse scenario than leaving Hamas in power there, but somehow keeping some control over what they do. So it's been carefully reported in terms of the way that Naftali Bennett discussed things yesterday with President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, in terms of disarming Hamas rather than defeating them. Of course, returning the hostages. We know that we have the bodies of two Israeli IDF soldiers, which have been there since the last operation, Protective Edge, and also the two Israelis who went into Gaza of their own accord and have not been heard of since. A number of years have since passed. And the Israeli government is very determined to return those two Israelis and the bodies of the two IDF soldiers. And, of course, Iranian aggression, halting Iranian aggression. There are reports that Iran has sent oil to Syria, and, of course, the Hezbollah leader has reported this quite triumphantly, that the oil tanker reached Syria, reached Lebanon, after having been sailed from Iran without being intercepted, without anything happening. And of course it shows the close relationship that is going on, that remains ongoing between Hezbollah and between the Iranian regime. So when we talk about Iranian aggression, it's not only about the nuclear program, which of course is very much on the agenda. It's also about Iranian presence in Lebanon, Iranian presence in Syria, Iranian feeding of weapons to Hezbollah, to enemies of Israel on the northern border, and of course Iran's presence in Gaza, which Egypt has quite a lot of interest in, and indeed some ability to influence what's going on. So it seems as if that was a good meeting. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett reported it as being very important and a very good meeting. And he said, first and foremost, we created a foundation for deep ties in the future. And of course, having good relations with Egypt is very important, because Egypt does have significant influence over what goes on in Gaza. And I think the Egyptians do have a desire to elevate themselves onto the international stage a little bit more, and to potentially present themselves as being something of more of a peacemaker on the international stage between Israel and Gaza elements, between Israel and Hamas, than has been acknowledged publicly in the past. I think they've done a fairly important job beneath the surface, perhaps behind the scenes, not so well publicized. I think that they're hoping that Naftali Bennett might well be able to elevate them a little bit and to push them forward on the international stage, so that some of their efforts can be more publicly recognized than have been before.
And I see that Netanyahu was quick to make a statement that actually he's had many meetings in secret before, which I thought was pretty classless.
Well, I think that Netanyahu is trying to do whatever he can at the moment to somehow discredit the current government. It's a relatively stable political situation that we find ourselves in since the last election, which really was something that people hadn't expected. And the Netanyahu-Likud faction are doing whatever they can to discredit the government in any possible way. If you had to drive past Prime Minister Naftali Bennett's private home, where he still has residence in Ra'anana, then there will be constant demonstrations by Likud activists supporting Netanyahu, constantly, day and night, standing outside his house, or as near as they can to the house, protesting against anything and everything that's going on. There doesn't necessarily seem to be a particular agenda, other than the agenda to somehow discredit the government in every possible way. So it comes as no surprise that he's made the comments that he has done in order to somehow try to take the limelight away from what I think has been a relatively important meeting yesterday.
I think extremely so. An apartment building in central Israel has collapsed one day after being evacuated. What was the issue with this building?
This is just an outrageous story, and unfortunately it doesn't end here. Apparently some sort of an explosion took place within the building the day before. This is an apartment building in the central Israeli town of Holon, which housed 32 families. And some explosion took place, and the families in the building suddenly understood that walls had cracked within the apartment building, within the block itself, and that some of them were complaining that they were unable to open or close doors because the door frames had been so dislodged that they were actually unable to move the doors. And then what happened was city architects were brought in to inspect the building, and the families were ordered immediately to evacuate the building for fear that the building was structurally unsound. And they were literally allowed to take very, very quickly just a small bag of their most precious belongings and were ushered out of the building within a very, very short space of time. That was on Friday. Then on Saturday, without any further announcement or without anything else happening to the building, all of a sudden, it just simply collapsed into a pile of rubble. Something along the lines of what we saw with that tragic event that took place in Florida. Literally, the building just crumbled into a heap on the ground. And of course, those families were very, very relieved that they were evacuated on time and were able to get out without any injury having been caused, without any deaths having been caused as a result of that building collapse. But then in the subsequent kind of follow-up, questions have been asked about the safety of the structure of other similar buildings. And the city in Holon has said, the municipality has said, that they feel that there are probably other buildings within the city that also are equally as dangerous. The city is not intended to go around inspecting nearby buildings unless there is a specific request from residents, but that residents are obliged, they have the responsibility to check things for themselves, and if they have any suspicions or any concerns, that they should call in relevant people to have a look. But it seems as if though there are more than one or two other buildings in similar kind of structurally a questionable shape, and of course this makes one wonder what might happen in the event that the much predicted earthquake comes to Israel, because they are predicting that a major earthquake is due sometime soon. There has been a massive amount of work to reinforce certain apartment buildings around Israel to make them earthquake proof, and at the same time to gentrify the buildings to try to improve their appearance, to add elevators to the buildings that don't have elevators and to make them a little bit more livable in the current day and age. But the main objective was to make them earthquake proof. But it seems as if though there still is a huge amount of work to be done in order to make older buildings in Israel safe, structurally sound. And if this is what can happen to a building without an earthquake coming along, it makes one shudder to think what may happen if there is that major earthquake that everybody's predicting.
Excuse that expression, makes you shudder. Anthony Wright, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45.